please join us in Los Angeles for the 64th annual OA birthday party, Friday, January 12th to Sunday, January 14th, 2024. Together we get better. In person at the LAX Hilton, please visit oalaig.org to book your room at a discounted rate. Registration opens in October 2023. Welcome to the OA Serenity Sunday Meeting Podcast. Serenity Sunday is now hybrid, meeting in person at Roxbury Park in Beverly Hills and on Zoom. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroups webpage at oalaig.org for information on how to join our meeting live in either iteration. Now that we're meeting in person, Serenity Sunday has regular meeting expenses and would appreciate Seventh Tradition donations to help support the meeting and this podcast. You can donate via Venmo at Serenity Sunday 2023 or through PayPal, Serenity Sunday 1212 at gmail.com. The opinions expressed on the Serenity Sunday podcast are those of the individual speaker and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. And now, our speaker.
Happy Sunday, everybody. It's great to be here. Serenity Sunday was my very, very first meeting at OA. I came here. I had no idea what a 12-step program actually was. I didn't have any friends, or I didn't really know anybody personally that actually was on a 12-step program. It was all sort of through movies and films and that type of thing that I actually heard about it. Now, I had a serious, serious problem with food. My food was totally unmanageable. In fact, food was actually managing me. It was actually ruling my life. That's the way I actually related to the world. That was the way I actually found solace, the way I actually distantiated, almost dissipated, you know, from real life. And no matter what I did, I always ended up back at food. That was effectively my drug of choice. Even though at the time, I didn't really understand it was a drug. It took me a while to actually really understand and comprehend what malaise that was, right? That allergy of the mind and allergy of the body, certainly in my case. Now, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I am originally from Spain. I grew up in a very traditional Mediterranean family. Three generations under one roof, very big house. And I grew up with my grandmother, with my great uncle living with us, my parents, my sister. It was a very loving family, no family issues. You know, it was just a very traditional family. My mom was very controlling, and she was very controlling, certainly from a place of love, right? She actually wanted the best for everybody. But she also assumed that she knew what was best for everyone, including food. So she would know exactly what everybody should eat. And the reality is that she was actually very good at it. But in my case, that was never enough. And I honestly think that there would be no better, higher power for me than my mom when it came to food. It would be fantastic if I actually ate like she actually wanted me to eat. The problem is that came with a level of control that wasn't inherent to myself. It actually came from the outside. And at the end of the day, I think our relationship with everything in life, certainly in my case with my substance abuse in terms of food, has to be between me and my higher power. It has to be a higher power that's somehow the spiritual and somehow within myself. It cannot be my mom, my wife, my friends. That just doesn't work, not for me. So while I was a little kid, until I was 9 or so, you know, I was just a normal kid, normal weight, because my mom actually controlled all my food. Fantastic. But then I'm 9 years old. I went to the island of Ibiza. My aunt and my uncle lived there. My parents sent me over there, took a plane on my own, you know, 9 years old, something that stays with you all your life. And I went over there, and it was a different place. You know, I had no restrictions whatsoever on what I could eat. I would have chocolate milk for breakfast. I would have ice cream 2 or 3 times a day. I would actually eat basically anything I wanted. To me, that was paradise. By the way, paradise in a very screwed up way, if you think about it. But, you know, to compose it for a 39-year-old, you know, it's like, hey, that's the definition of paradise. Who doesn't like Ibiza, right? And so I went there, spent 2 weeks, and I must have changed a lot, because when I went back, I remember the words of my mom when she actually saw me at the airport, and she said, what happened to you? Yeah, I probably crammed as many calories in my body as any human being possibly could at night. Yeah. So that's my first memory of being a compulsive overeater. Then from then on, I struggled with weight basically all my life. And then the way I dealt with it was through diets. Yeah, I think many of us have actually done that. I actually was a yo-yo all my life. And it was a different point in time. I remember when I was 14, you sort of have your awakening, you know, to, you know, people you like, same sex, other sex, doesn't really matter. But, you know, at the time I was 14, no girl would actually look at me, right? So I went on a diet. And lo and behold, girls started looking at me, had girlfriends, all of those good things. But my compulsion was actually bigger than my desire to actually fit in society in sort of a normative way. So by the time I was 18, I had actually put on the weight, lost it again at university, gained it, lost it, gained it, lost it. You know, it was bad. And it wasn't until I was 45 or so, 44, 45, that I actually realized that while I could diet and lose weight, the reality is that that weight would actually come back with a vengeance. And it wasn't a physical problem, or not just a physical problem. There's, I'm sure, a physical element to it. But it was a problem that actually went beyond that. At that time, I called it a psychological problem. Now I've come to realize that there's a part of it which is spiritual as well. And that's when I actually came to OA. Part of it, in terms of dealing with spirituality, is that spirituality is something that I wasn't very comfortable with as an adult. I grew up, growing up in Spain in the sort of 80s, there was basically one religion. You know, it was Catholic. These days it has changed a lot, but at the time, basically, if you were Spanish, you were religious, you were Catholic, that was it. And you would go to Mass every Sunday, and, you know, you would go to catechism and all of those good things. And I believe, when I was a little kid, I believed, and it was wonderful. You know, I had at night conversations with God. It was wonderful, absolutely wonderful. However, when the age of reason came to me, I realized that there were many things, particularly in the church, that I didn't like. Yeah, it's my personal opinion. I didn't like how conservative it was, how classist, how misogynistic, how homophobic, and many other things that it just wasn't for me. So I took that. I also took a very rationalistic view on life. And I thought, hey, this thing about religion, God, etc., is just a story that us humans make up to actually, for some people, control society through religion, for other people, feel better about themselves. Yeah. And I decided I don't want anything to do with this anymore. So I became effectively agnostic, maybe an atheist. I looked down upon people, not personally, but as groups. You know, it's, I thought, oh, gee, look at these people, you know, following like sheep, you know, what the Pope says, or what, you know, Allah says, or, you know, whatever it is, I don't really care. And I basically, that became part of my identity. And that actually stayed with me for a long time, together, of course, with my disease, my yo-yo dieting, and a certain underlying unhappiness that was with me all along. I've had a very, very privileged life, a very wonderful life. And however, underneath, I've always had a sense of unease that just never went away. It was always down there. I would actually be happy for a period of time, but then wake up in the morning and having these negative thoughts and all of these things, something was not really right with my life. Yeah. I never associated it necessarily with food, but it certainly was an undercurrent that was always there with me. So I was recommended to come to OA, as I said, when I was probably 45, four or five years ago. And I lived two blocks from here. So it was super convenient to come here. It was actually very easy. I walked here. And Serenity Sunday, as I said, was my first meeting. Before Serenity Sunday, there was a newcomers meeting. So that was where I started. And I remember looking at the leaflet, and there were something like 15 points where you say yes or no. You know, it's have you actually eaten frozen food? Have you actually taken food out of the garbage? You know, all of those things. And I started answering the questions. And at the end of it, I looked at it, I said, oh my God. You know, out of 15 points, 14 were a resounding yes. And one was like, I'm not sure, but maybe yes. It's crazy, right? So if there's a definition of a compulsive overeater, it was written there and it applied 100% for me. At that point, I had no doubt whatsoever that I was a compulsive overeater. Now it took me a little while longer to actually get on with the program. Yeah. One of the, there are multiple reasons. One of them is this issue with God, right? I came here being an atheist was part of my identity. Just to give you an idea, I lived in London before moving to LA for a few years. My roommate or flatmate, as it's called over there, was actually the president of the Atheist Society of the UK. Okay, that's the company I keep, all right? He's still a dear friend, he's like family. Yeah, but since then I've actually had a different journey in that regard. And I read the other day this saying that I loved and I have it written here because I said it was a beautiful thing to say about religion and higher power. It says that religion is our attempt to show how much we love God. Spirituality is our attempt to become humble enough so that our higher power can show us how much he loves us. I think that's beautiful. By the way, nothing wrong with religion, nothing wrong at all. For me personally, I like this idea of being worthy of love by my higher power. And that gives me a sense of serenity, of tranquility, of, you know what? I deserve being loved just by who I am. Not because of what I do. Okay? I still need to do things, but I do things because if I do the wrong thing, I don't feel good about myself. Yeah, someone sent me a text the other day and he said, you know how faith is actually spelled? Faith is spelled A-C-T-I-O-N. Okay, so I don't think there's actually faith without action. So feeling loved is not something that is just passive. It's something that is there. It's for me to take at any point in time, all the time. I am loved unconditionally by my higher power. Yeah. At the same time, I have to be able to feel good by myself, not because my higher power is going to love me more or less, but to actually feel good about myself to go on with my life. I have to take action that is actually in harmony to what that higher power actually wants for me, for my fellows, for society, etc. That's at least the way I actually feel about it. Continuing on the concept of spirituality, I have not actually had a spiritual experience. Yeah, I would love to. Yeah, I think it was Saint Paul who actually fell off the horse, and then he actually went from being a tax collector, which in Roman times was not a beautiful job, to actually being a disciple of Jesus Christ at the time. Right, fantastic. You know, it's good for him. I wish I would have fallen off a horse. Yeah, I have not. For me, it's actually a journey. Right now, I've been 5 years in the program, 4 years abstinent. And I actually do believe. For a long time, I had to act as if. And that's perfectly okay. It was perfectly okay for me. Yeah, I had this constant dichotomy, this constant thought of, it's yes, but I'm doing this. But in reality, is there anything out there? In truth, I don't think it matters. Because I can honestly say, and, people close to me have said the same thing, that I am a better person now than I was 5 years ago. I don't think I was a bad person, but I think I am a better person. I certainly try to, as I said, be more in harmony, have more flow with the world, with the people around me, with my higher power. And in fact, my definition of higher power is not God, it's not some patriarchal God, with a white beard or anything like that. My definition of a higher power is effectively the right thing. That's what it is. I call the higher power the right thing. Dr. Seuss actually comes to mind as well, which I think it's a nice thing. As long as I am in touch with the right thing, a lot of my problems go away. Yeah. And some people, particularly if they're newcomers in the meeting, may be thinking, okay, what has all of this got to do with food. Yeah, because in principle, what's the relationship between having a cookie and doing the right thing when you actually have the opportunity to do so? The reality is that the reason I ate, and I think I'm not alone in this, it's because fundamentally I wanted to go away for a little moment from something that didn't make me feel good. And if I take away that need to not feel badly about something, then my need to eat actually diminishes a lot. Yeah, and that's actually very important, because I need to be able to actually not take that first bite. And the concept of the first bite is very important for me, because I was thinking about this the other day. You know, I still struggle, by the way. I'm not, you know, it's not like I have a perfect program or anything like that. So, you know, I was, you know, the other day it was, you know, mid-afternoon, and I was really, really, really hungry. And well, that's what my mind told me. By the way, my mind tells me that if I don't eat, I'm gonna die. It sounds stupid, but that's what my mind tells me. And I firmly believe it. I firmly believe at moments that if I don't eat, I am going to die. Intellectually, I know that's not the case.
Five more minutes.
Thank you so much. However, that's the way I actually feel. I feel I'm going to die if I don't eat. It's like, seriously? Talk about craziness, right? I'm the definition of craziness. So I remember feeling like that. I said that probably was last week. And I thought, maybe I should actually have something to eat. And then I remembered that if I take that first bite, yeah, I'm going to basically eat as much as I possibly can. And there will not be enough food in the world to satisfy me. I could eat the whole of Ralph's. I could eat the whole of all the Ralph's in LA, and I still would not be happy. That's the reality. That's my reality. So I actually use, you know, the tools in the program, contrary action, the best. It's fantastic. You know, if I actually did do contrary action more often, I would be even a better person, because my mind really takes me to places where I should literally do the opposite. I actually, you know, spoke to my sponsor, and there's many things that, you know, people do. Some people like to write, some people like to meditate, some people, you know, I have done it, you know, it's just left the house and, you know, go for a walk. Yeah. And it's like a miracle. I came back to the house 30 minutes later, and I go from thinking that I was going to die to actually still being alive. Hey, I didn't take a bite and I'm still alive. You know, that's it's incredible. And oh, by the way, I actually don't feel hungry, or at least I don't feel the urge anymore. That's crazy. Take a bit. Yeah. And it's amazing how these things work. Now, these things work only if, as I said earlier, we take action. Because it's not something that is just, at least not in my case, it's not just bestowed upon me to actually have serenity and not have, you know, compulsive eating. No, there's a program that actually needs to be followed, right? The steps are there for a reason. Community. Community is very, very important. Fellowship is very important. I actually am in touch with people. I do outreach calls. I come to meetings, obviously. Service is critical. I, you know, I'm of service in a weekly meeting, and I force myself to be of service. And I force myself because being of service means somehow, I don't know how it works, but somehow it means that I am going to, I don't know, maybe uphold myself to a higher standard and not have to actually do certain things that otherwise I would actually do. So those tools are actually very important. For me, even though it's not a tool in the program, exercise, it's also very important. I don't exercise compulsively. I know some people may have done in the past. In my case, it's not that. It just clears my mind. It's almost like a form of meditation to me, to actually go on a run or go on a yoga class or something like that. So that daily practice, it's very, very important. Being part of the fellowship, being part of the community is something that keeps me sane. And The last thing I want to talk about is I want to talk about the concept of freedom. Because I think my compulsion in many ways comes from the fear of being free. If I actually don't have freedom, my life becomes very easy. I don't have to make decisions. I don't have to make hard decisions. I just do as I'm told. Yeah. That actually becomes a very easy life. It doesn't become a full life though. And I think that fear is inherently what has actually led me to eat, because while I'm eating, the fear goes away because I'm not thinking, I'm in a numb state. So one time, a long time ago, Rhett or somebody told me that there is a space between the stimulus or the compulsion to actually take a bite or whatever it is and the response, right? We can have the compulsion to do it. But then there's a little space between that compulsion and actually doing it. And that's our choice. And that's fundamentally our freedom. And I believe, or certainly for me, what this program has done is it has actually allowed me the tools to exercise that freedom. And therefore, I actually take that little space and I exercise my freedom. And most of the time, again, without perfection, I can actually get the right thing done, which is in my case, not to take that first line. With that said, thank you so much, everybody. Thank you for listening to me. And it's wonderful to be here. Thank you.